Hello, Thomas Phillips from Sanctuary. How you doing?
Good. How's it going, man?
Well, I want to welcome you to upcoming DIS.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, we just got done watching Sanctuary, quite a conundrum last night. Well, I got to tell you, the first thing I have to say is, you know, I'm a little bit wondering if maybe there's some mismarketing going on, because, you know, looking at the cover, I went in there looking, thinking that I was going to watch some kind of Eli Roth torture porn from the picture of the girl on the cover, and what we got was a black comedy, I think.
Yes, you know, I'm not going to argue that with you at all. when I made this movie, I always looked at it as a dark comedy. That's how I wrote the movie, and that's how I was actually marketing the movie when I was writing it and I was getting it out to the film festivals.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the film festivals were putting it in the horror category, and we were winning all these horror awards as opposed to... We were winning other awards, too. We were winning, you know, best overall defense, best drama. But then, you know, they started putting it in the horror category.
Right.
And then when distributors started looking at the movie to possibly purchase it and release it, they wanted to put it in the horror category. They needed somewhere to put it. And
sure.
I don't think really they knew where to put it at times, because it kind of... It does play on multiple genres. It does play on multiple levels. So,
sure.
You know, as anything with the movie industry or music industry, you end up having to categorize it.
Right.
That's what happened, is that they needed somewhere to put it.
Well, and that's kind of a blessing and a curse to have a movie that can't be so easily categorized, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, no, it is. You know, if it was straight horror, you know, you got your very adamant, you know, horror fans who are always there, and, you know, they're the most loyal fans in the world. So, you know, they can expect to go in to watch a horror movie, and, you know, they could be disappointed because it's not your standard typical horror movie. But then at the same time, you get people that are pleasantly surprised because, you know, I want to watch a horror movie, and they think they're having to watch a horror movie, and the next thing you know, they're laughing, and
sure.
They love the dark comedy. So, it is a double-edged sword.
Well, like I said, it's a blessing in a way in that it shows some clever or originality when it can't necessarily be pigeonholed, and you got to take some pride in that.
Yeah, no, I do take pride in that. For me, you know, as I was saying before, I wrote a movie that I wanted to tell that really didn't fit into any genre, and people would say that I'm crazy for doing that, but, you know, I really just wanted to tell this story. And when I was writing and making it, you know, it didn't concern me that it didn't fit in a category. It didn't concern me that I was
right.
Doing something that was... It was kind of different because I think it is a different take on multiple genres. And
sure.
It wasn't until it started playing and, you know, the critics and the film festival started, you know, trying to put it in the category and finally started thinking about it. It never concerned me before.
Right.
I was just a filmmaker telling a story, and then all of a sudden I had to start thinking about the business side of it.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily the most friendliest side to think about. Take a moment and brag here a little bit, because I have noticed you have a significant number of festival awards coming out of this film. What are some of give us some of the highlights of those?
Well, yeah, we had a good run. We were official selection to 32 festivals. We had 36 nominations, and we took home 17 awards. So it was really cool, you know, to get the movie out there, but to have the response that we did, you know, we won Best Feature Film at the New York International Film Festival.
Right.
But some of my favorite awards were the ones that went to the actors. Like, they were nominated over and over. And, you know, Aaron and Sasha and Emily and Anthony, they all won separate acting awards, which was really makes me happy as a director to see my actors winning awards
sure.
for the stuff that I wrote. And so those are real highlights, watching the actors win awards. And then, for the end, you know, I think I took home 3 Best Director awards. And of course, that feels good when people actually recognize, you know, the directing and what goes into this. And I had never won, like, a directing award before from my previous film, so that was really nice.
Well, look, it sounds good. And, you know, you talked about the actors, and I want to talk about that a little bit in this film. It's a very, very much an ensemble piece. There's not really a particular standout, you know, person, you know, top of the roll call list and stuff. But what I do find is the dialogue. There's a lot of rapid-fire dialogue that seems pretty cool and natural, and I'm wondering how much of that was scripted and how much of that was some liberty for the actors to improv.
Well, yeah, I mean, 85% of that was scripted. I wrote very heavy, quick dialogue, and that was a huge part of casting, and it was very important is to find actors that could deliver this kind of over-the-top dialogue,
yeah,
but yet still make it believable and sound like these people are, that's how they talk, and they're not, you know, reading off a script. So that was very hard. So when I found these actors that could just nail this dialogue, God, it just lifted so much off of me, because the wrong actors living this dialogue would just completely ruin the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and there are quite a few scenes in the movie where, you know, Chris and Joe, and, you know, I let them just do what comes naturally to them, because they're very talented, they have great timing. So there are a lot of great moments in the movie where it's not scripted, where they just said what was on their head, you know, they just let it fly. And a lot of those moments just ended up in the movie because some of the stuff they said was better than what I had written.
Well, and you get that impression, because the one thing, like I said, I was really taken is there are times, like when the ladies are talking or the guys are talking when they're first coming to the house, there's a lot of that rapid fire back and forth that it's, you know, that would be a tough thing to script, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know, I get asked this a lot. The scene outside the door with the two guys, we meet them for the first time.
Right.
There's a lot of improv there. I had no problem giving them all the credit in the world.
Right.
But then the other part, like when the two girls, when we first have them talking at the kitchen table.
Yes.
People always think that that's ad-lib. That's 100% word for word.
Oh, okay.
Like, people always like, they had to ad-lib that. How did they do that? I'm like, and I get, so they're like, oh, that sounded so natural. That sounded like they've known each other forever and they're finishing other sentences. I'm like, yeah, that's, you know, I love writing female characters, and, you know, that scene right there is word for word, and some people are believing that that one's not ad-libbed. But, you know, when the guys, when we meet them, there's a lot of ad-lib.
Yeah.
On there.
Well, there's a lot of similarity between those two scenes, so I can see why, you know, people would think that, because, truthfully, that's how I looked at it. I suspected there was a bunch of ad-lib in there, so I'd take credit for doing a good job of creating natural dialogue. It's a hard thing to do.
It is. You know, writing, especially when you're writing dialogue like this that is quick and witty and over the top, to be able to pull it out and, you know, make it seem natural with these actors, I think it's very hard to do. And you see it in a lot of movies where this dialogue and you feel like it's all forced.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want that. As a filmmaker, especially when you're editing and you're putting it together, you're
sure.
Like, oh man, this sounds fake, it sounds contrived.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and chemistry is important, too, and there seems to be a decent amount of chemistry here. Is there anything that you did with the cast, maybe before filming, to help build up a bond or some kind of chemistry within the cast?
Well, you know, for three of them, yes. A lot of the chemistry just came natural, and we shot the movie sequentially. So we watched these characters grow together because we shot the movie in order.
Okay.
You know, it's never
That's
done.
Rare.
Yeah, but luckily, with a movie that takes place over an eight-hour period in one location, we were afforded the chance to do that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it was very important with Sasha and Aaron, the two best friends, and then her younger sister, that they seem like family, that they've known each other for years. And so, you know, the weekend before we started filming for, you know, 3 days, like, you know, I locked them all in a hotel room. They had one bed and a couch. And they were forced to stay with each other for three nights.
Uh-huh.
And drink together, so they hadn't learned about each other, and you know they had kind of chemistry and bond going on before they got to set. And I think you could really see that on set.
Well, it shows, and that's why I suspected you did have some kind of a bonding exercise, because it, you know, there is chemistry with them. You also in your production design, your set design, I see you take advantage of some odd placements, and I don't know who takes credit for this, you or somebody on your production design, but I noticed just odd placement things, a pizza clock, a watermelon, the Jesus bingo cards. I mean, you seem to take advantage of those moments of just things that are, you know, props are just there, but, you know, stand out and kind of grab the viewer's attention.
Yeah, you know, we had a lot of random props that we made sure, like you said, the pizza clock and stuff like that. We made sure to put, you know, just random kind of
right.
anybody would ever notice that are kind of there. There's actually a wiener dog statue that is in like five different scenes.
Uh-huh.
Is randomly there. It was my production designer and me having fun and, you know, putting random stuff in there and seeing if
sure.
people would catch it. Now, the Jesus Bingo cards, you know, that was created for the movie. That was an idea that I had. When I thought I was original, I actually was writing that, and I came up with the idea of having a Jesus Bingo card because Jesus is five letters just like bingo.
Right.
I thought I was, like, the greatest writer ever. But then I actually did research, and they actually do have Jesus Bingo.
So there is Jesus Bingo going on out there.
There are, Chris, there are churches and stuff that play bingo with Jesus instead of bingo. So I wasn't as cool as I thought I was.
Okay. Well, you know, a lot of this is taking advantage of a limited budget. You know, that's one of the things that I look for in a low-budget film is does a writer write to the budget, or does he try to do things that are just way too ambitious and get out of hand and can't do? And you seem to have done that. Can you talk about, you know, the budget and how that affected decisions you made?
Well, I mean, the budget, the limited budget, you know, helps and hurts. And for me, like, I knew I had 2 weeks, I had 14 days, and we shot for 12. I knew I had this much time to shoot a movie.
Right.
With this equipment and this crew and this cast. So I knew going in that I wanted to write a movie that was contained.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's all in one location.
Well, that's smart.
So I took that all into consideration. So many independent filmmakers and writers, you know, well, I want to make my first movie, and I've written this $300 million budget. Like, write something that you can actually do.
Right.
Write something that you can raise the money for. Write something. All right, I have my mom's garage. I have my dad's house. I have my friend's restaurant. All right, write that because that's what you know you have for free.
Right.
So yeah, all that goes into consideration with writing, and you know, and the great thing about not having all this money and equipment, not having all the toys that you wish you could play, like with dollies and cranes,
sure,
whatever. You get the beauty of, you know, designing shot structure and your DP coming up with creative ways to shoot stuff
mm-hmm.
that doesn't involve all these wonderful toys that make it easy.
Yeah.
So there's a form of, you know, forced creativity that comes with a low-budget movie. There was a great shot in the movie where I had, like, a Steadicam plan, and we couldn't afford the Steadicam. We couldn't get it. So I had to come up with a whole shot structure for this scene, and the scene plays so much better the way we shot it than the
right.
Steadicam ever would have, because we were forced to be creative. And it's a very creepy scene. It's a scene where, you know, the mom walks in at the end, and you just see her
right.
black, shiny high heels, and they're squeaking.
Sure.
Like, we were originally supposed to follow her through with the Steadicam, but
instead
I had to do this slow movement with the creaking shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just watched it. And it turned out a lot better because I wasn't afforded the Steadicam and that
sure.
money for her.
Well, and money can sometimes make, I think, filmmakers lazy. I think it can, and you don't have the luxury of being lazy when you have a limited budget. And I think what happens is it comes out more organic. I mean, do you get that feeling that you felt like what you finished with was more organic, flowed a little bit better, and almost had a touch to reality to it?
No, yeah, I see that all the time with filmmakers that I admire when they're working on limited budgets like me. Like, you know, you're forced to work together. You're forced to be friendly. It's very calm. There's a lot of camaraderie, and it just becomes organic because everybody actually cares about what they're doing.
Sure.
And so, you know, there's a lot more putting into it as, you know, when you're dealing with big budgets and everybody's getting paid and you have everything
yeah.
you want, then it becomes more of a business venture than it is a storytelling creative venture. And I think you get that a lot more in the independent world.
Yeah. And
you get a lot more creativity and an organic film because everybody cares about what's going on.
Well, and people are forced to wear more than one hat. I mean, in this film, you work quite a bit yourself, but I have a feeling that even the cast and crew had to wear multiple hats to be able to deliver this thing on the budget.
Yeah, I mean, your crew members that were, you know, they were more than one department. They were doing, you know, five, six things on
sure.
set, you know. And, you know, that just comes with it, and you know, but it makes them work harder and really enjoy what they're doing. And, you know, even the actors help out, you know.
Right.
On crew, you know, they're moving stuff or carrying stuff, and, you know, they're always there for the other actors, and everybody, it's really one of those cliche things where everybody's putting in 110%, but they literally actually are.
Yeah. And you filmed this a couple, 3 hours from where we're at here in Tampa, Florida. I see you filmed this in Jacksonville, Florida. How was that for an atmosphere?
Yeah, it was. I was actually in Jacksonville as a guest professor at a university.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just supposed to be there for like 6 months, and while I was there, I came up with the idea for the movie, and I came up with the idea to give the film students a chance to crew on a, you know, an actual feature film. So it just all came up, and, you know, I was there, so I decided to film there, and I took advantage of the situations and the equipment and the money, and so it was a fun place to film. I never thought, like, oh, I'm going to go shoot in Jacksonville, Florida. I just happened to be there, and everything kind of worked out. You know, three of my leading actors are, four of them are from Florida. They still live there.
Ah. So it's taken, once again, taking advantage of what's presented to you at the time.
Yeah, I knew I had this equipment for this amount of time. I knew I had, you know, the ability of these crew members that would love to be working on a feature film, and so you get the advantages of all that.
So what filmmakers do you credit as some of the influences on you?
So many, but, you know, it's interesting. I can cover the DVD, you know.
Sure.
Somebody, one of the reviewers called it Clerks Meet Scream.
Yeah, I saw that.
That quote, because I'm a Kevin Smith, I'm a diehard Kevin Smith fan, and he's one of the huge reasons that I'm actually a filmmaker, very inspirational to me.
Right.
Love the guy. So, and, you know, he comes from the same world that I do, this very independent world. Like, you know, so I enjoy what he did early in his career, him and Richard Linklater.
Right.
And Ed Burns, all these filmmakers in the early 90s that didn't have any money, and they went out there and told their stories anyway. So that's a huge inspiration on me. A lot of the independent filmmakers that we saw come up in the 90s.
Well, and I see a lot of 80s party movie influences here.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, there's even lines in there about Don Hughes and 80s movies. And I'm an 80s kid, obviously, and anything with John Hughes, Molly Ringwald, like, all of that had a big influence on me. Like,
but you could tell.
I miss those movies. They don't exist anymore. I mean, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Weird Science, like, all that, man. Those were great films back in the day, and they're a huge influence on me and my writing.
Well, great. So what's next for you? Anything coming up that you can talk about?
Yeah, I'm hoping to go to camera in November on my new movie. It's another dark comedy horror film, but it goes into the world of the fetish community in Los Angeles and a very strong female serial killer taking revenge on them.
Oh. Well, we'll look forward to seeing that. Well,
excited for that one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Well, our time's probably up here, and I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us here at Upcoming Diz.
Not a problem, man. Thank you for the time to interview me. Anything to help promote this movie, man. I truly appreciate it.
Well, we'll definitely get it up on the site, and we'll look forward to your next one.
Thank you, man. You have a great weekend.
You too, Thomas. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.